welcome to another episode of the Tales from the DC Multiverse podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Pretty good, Adam. What about you?
I'm doing well. Doing very well. It's our second episode under the new title, which I almost botched, but I'll get it straight. I'll get it.
You stuck the landing there, bud. That's all that.
Yeah, it was a rough landing, but I stuck it, so we're good. But yeah, I'm doing well. How about you? Everything good?
Yes, just getting back into the swing of things post the holidays.
Yeah, so. Post holidays is always an interesting time to get back into the swing of things and get back to a routine. But we're doing it, and we'll be back in the full swing of things in all aspects pretty soon here. Let's get right to our usual business, and I want to tie in. Well, I'm going to tie in one of my comic recommendations with some news that we have this week. I'm going to recommend the graphic novel Batman and the Long Halloween. It's a murder mystery that takes place over the course of 12 months. And each part of this graphic novel takes place on a specific holiday, which is pretty interesting. It goes back to Batman's early days, and it features the sort of mob gang war in Gotham with the Falcones and the Maronis, and it also features some of the more flamboyant costumed, you know, villains that we're accustomed to. I think it really is, that book is sort of, in terms of Gotham's history, the tail end of the mafia being in charge and the transition to the crazies, you know, the Arkham Asylum inmates running the show in Gotham City. So it's a cool book. It's written by Jeff Loeb, who I think is a masterful storyteller, and is drawn by Tim Sale, who has a very unique art style. So that would be my recommendation in terms of comic book reading for this week. And Travis, do you have any comic books that you want to recommend to our listeners?
I think I can. That will tie in with some of our news as well. I'm not sure if I mentioned this before on this podcast, but there is one Superman story that is my favorite story of all. It is Superman Red Son. And I just love that. I love the different take on Superman. And just imagining if he would have landed somewhere that didn't have the values of Martha and Jonathan Kent, what the world would have turned out like. I really enjoy it. And I think we're going to be able to talk about this a little bit more just a little bit.
Yeah, I would concur. It's a great story. One of my favorite, not only one of my favorite Elseworlds stories, but one of my favorite Superman stories as well. And the reason why we're mentioning this is obviously, first and foremost, because they're great stories. But also because we do have news on those two comics being turned into animated movies. The ever reliable Mario Francisco Robles from Revenge of the Fan he's at it again with the animated scoops. Last week we talked about the cast list for Hush, and now the first story he broke was the fact that DC is making a 2-part Long Halloween animated movie. And given the length of the story, I think two-part story is perfect. Much like last week's Hush news, we have a cast list, but we don't know exactly what roles they're associated with. So I'll just read off some of the names. Troy Baker is going to be in this. He's voiced the Joker in the past. I think he voiced the Joker in Under the Red Hood. Jensen Ackles is going to be in this. He, of course, voiced Jason Todd slash the Red Hood in that same movie, Batman Under the Red Hood. Naya Rivera, who is a Glee actress, is going to be voicing a role. Titus Welliver, who's been in Sons of Anarchy, is going to be a part of the proceedings. As is, I can't really pronounce, I think this is how you pronounce it, David Damalshan. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But anyway, he was in, let's see, apparently he was in Batman Assault on Arkham. So that's the cast list for that. What do you think of some of these names?
Oh, they excite me. Like we were saying before we started recording, Under Red Hood is one of my favorite DC animated movies. And just to get anybody from this cast is pretty fantastic. But I have no idea who Jensen Ackles is going to play. Because we both know that the Red Hood's not in this story, but they have changed and adapted stories to include other characters before, like the death of Superman, for example. So we don't know, but I like how Mario speculates that he could play a Harvey Dent, younger Harvey Dent character.
Yeah, he could very well. Yeah.
That might be that. If there was lines on it from Vegas, that would probably be the odd-damn favorite for me.
Well, I'm going to go against the grain. I'm gonna make a guess. I'm gonna say Jensen Ackles voices Batman. I could be totally off, but that's my guess. I will not bet any money because I'm still recovering from all the Christmas shopping and stuff like that. That's my guess. We'll see how it shakes out. But either way, I am so excited for this. It'll be interesting to see how they adapt Tim Sale's art style, because it is very unique, and it'll be interesting to see how the animators approach that. But we'll have to wait and see. The other scoop that Mario had, as we mentioned, was regarding Superman Red Son. So I'll read down the list of names. Amy Acker, who has voiced the Huntress in the past. Anna Vocino, who has voiced Oracle several times. Diedrich Bader, who has voiced Batman in Batman Brave and the Bold. Greg Chun, who I'm not sure who that is. Jim Ward, who has voiced Commissioner Gordon several times. Jason Isaacs, who's voiced Lex Luthor, Sinestro, and Ra's al Ghul. We have Jason Spezak, who's often done the voice for Wally West. Jim Meskimen, who's voiced both Batman and Mr. Freeze. Paul Williams, who is often associated with the vocal sounds of the Penguin. Fred Lamar, who, I mean, you could run down the list of how many DC characters he's voiced. Phil Morris, again, take your pick at how many DC characters he's voiced. Roger Craig Smith, who voiced Batman in the, what I consider, terrible Batman Ninja. I couldn't stand that movie.
I kind of enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, to each their own, but I mean, not super.
Like, I wouldn't defend it against anybody. I just kind of enjoyed the animation.
I think that's my problem was the animation style. I'm not a fan of that style of animation. So
yeah,
for me, it was kind of a turnoff. We also have Sasha Ruiz, the DC veteran in terms of voice acting. Tara Strong is going to be a part of this thing. Travis Willingham, who's voiced Superman in a couple of Lego projects. Vanessa Marshall, who plays Black Canary on Young Justice and has also played Poison Ivy vocally before. William Salyers has voiced both the Penguin and Hugo Strange. And Winter Zoli is also part of the cast. interesting to see who'll play who in this. I mean, the obvious choice for me, because a Red Sun version of Batman appears in this, and I think Diedrich Bader will play him. That's my guess. Jason Isaacs will probably reprise the role of Lex Luthor. And in terms of Superman, I'm going to go with the guy that voiced him in a bunch of the Lego movies, Travis William. And that'll be interesting because if he does the voice, you know, the Red Sun Superman is very different than the Superman we see in the Lego movies. So we'll see how, if this actor does play Superman again, how his vocal inflections change to reflect the more serious nature of the Superman that appears in Red Sun. It'll be interesting. What are your thoughts on this cast list?
I'm pretty excited. Like you said, there's a few of these that have appeared in different things I've consumed. But I don't know who would be Superman. Maybe Travis Willingham. I'd like how Mario speculated that it could be Roger Craig Smith.
Yeah.
Because he's done Captain America in a ton for Marvel, so he could probably handle the Superman Boy Scout voice pretty good. So that excites me, and I can't really put it together as much with this cast who they're going to play as with the last one that we got. So I just look forward to finding out more.
I think it's worth noting that I think both of these particular movies will come out in 2020. Because we already have our 2019 slate of animated movies pretty much, locked down. So these are candidates for 2020, and I'm sure they'll be officially, announced by the studio, probably at various Comic Cons and such like that. So we'll have to wait and see. But what I think we should do is before they are released, we should, in addition to reviewing the movies, we may want to add, these two books to our comic segment.
Sure. I think that's a must. I think that has to happen for sure.
So that'll be interesting. But awesome news. I hope Mario continues to provide us with these kind of animated DC scoops because they're great. And they provide us with lots of news as a bonus, so it's good.
Just makes me want 2020 to come a little bit faster, Mario. That's all.
Yeah. Not that I want to rush through 2019 because we we do have Shazam and Joker and Hush and all these cool things. So I don't want to rush through this year because but needless to say, the next few years of DC content is going to be amazing.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, why don't we talk about some live-action DC content that has recently returned from a rather lengthy hiatus. And what I'm speaking of is the premiere episode of the final season of Gotham, which is season 5. Travis, when Gotham last left us, Ra's al Ghul and... Jeremiah Velasca, aka, I don't care what Gotham people say, that's the Joker.
I believe we all know that it is.
They can give me, oh, it's not the Joker. That's a crock of crap. He's playing the Joker, and that's all there is to it. I think they're just trying to keep the suspense going.
They're just saving it until we both, I think they don't want to say anything until we see both of them on screen in acne chemicals.
Yeah, exactly.
Then that's what they're waiting for. I think we got a little snippet of that in the trailer at the end of this episode as well.
Yeah. So Jeremiah and Ra's al Ghul have basically implanted bombs around the city, and they've sort of leveled the bridges and essentially left Gotham in literally a blaze of fiery chaos, and also cut off from the rest of civilization in a way. And so when we pick up with season five, what we have is the GCPD is trying to sort of maintain some semblance of order and also shelter the people weren't able to get out of the city. And so they're trying to provide refuge for them. Meanwhile, the majority of the city has been sort of broken up into territories, and sort of there's factions of different criminal elements controlling different areas of Gotham. The major players the major players that we see in control of different areas of Gotham are the Penguin, Barbara Keene, and we're told the Scarecrow. We also Victor Zsasz is mentioned as being in control of an area of Gotham, and it's interesting because, you know, Barbara Keene and her quote-unquote sirens, because they run the club and you know, sort of the quote-unquote entertainment district in Gotham, they have access to, like, more food and stuff like that, whereas Penguin is in control of weaponry. Mm. So it's cool to see them having to barter with each other for the different things they need, especially the fact that they can't stand each other. Like, these two characters can't stand each other. And so it's interesting to watch them. You have to sort of begrudgingly work together. Meanwhile, we have... actually, before I get there, let me say, I think, because if you remember in interviews and stuff, the producers have said, you know, they're taking their cues from No Man's Land and Zero Year. And I think what they're taking is from No Man's Land and Zero Year is the fact that Gotham is in chaos and sort of separated from the rest of the world. And the fact that the government is in no hurry to come and provide release. I think that's what they're taking from those two stories, more so than anything. What's your thought on the whole scenario of the city being broken off in parts amongst the criminal element? And also, do you think that's what they mean when they say they're taking elements from those two stories?
I think you're right on the money there, Adam. And it really reminds me of a little bit of the Dark Knight Rises too, the way that it was cut off from everything else,
mm-hmm.
which is a nice little nod. And like you said before, I really enjoyed the fact that they had to barter and trade amongst themselves because each territory has resources that the others don't. And even though that they all want to kill each other, they pretty much have to coexist until they want to make a play for each other's territories. Also, a thing you didn't mention there was Victor Freeze has territory up north and it's fighting / at war with Firefly.
Mm, yes.
So I thought that was a cool little nod there too. I love that, and it just gives Gotham the hopelessness that you want it to have before Batman arrives. And there's a lot of stuff in this episode that Jim Gordon says that pretty much describes what Batman's mission truly is, giving hope when there is no hope, and like being there for people, it was just fantastic. I really enjoyed it. A really good first episode to kick off the final season.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of? Because here's an interesting part. Let's look at where Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle are at, because we didn't really touch on them at all. I'll obviously remember at the end of last season, Jeremiah broke into Wayne Manor and interrupted a rather tender moment between Bruce and Selina and shot her in the spine. So, you know, in effect, paralyzing her, much like the Joker did to Barbara Gordon in the comics. So when we pick up with these two characters, we see Bruce trying to tend to Selina and providing her with, you know, medical resources to try and cure or not. I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, I guess it would be.
Treat her condition.
Yes, treat her, that's it. And in that we see that, you know, Selina is really struggling with what's happened to her to the point where she tries and kills herself.
Yeah, that was a great scene, actually.
And then, you know, Bruce comes in at the very last moment and with the doctors and is able to prevent her from doing so. But then, you know, they perform surgery on her, but unfortunately, she remains unable to walk. And then there's a suggestion. One of the nurses suggests that she needs a quote-unquote a witch to cure her. Now, I don't think they're talking about a literal witch, because remember, I think it was either last season or the season before. It might have been last season when I think Selina was also injured, and Poison Ivy, via her plants and her potions, was able to cure her. And I think that's who the nurse is talking about when she mentions the witch.
That could very well be. That's pretty good. I didn't even think about that, Adam. That's actually, I think you could be right there.
And so that's what I think is going on in terms of that. But it's also cool that Bruce was splitting his time between, you know, tending to Selina and also helping out the GCPD. So he's really taking on this pre-Batman role and sort of trying to, you know, he uses his wealth to bring in, to sort of try and fly in more food and clothing and stuff like that for the people that are still stuck in Gotham. And when that helicopter comes through, of course, you know, the different factions of criminals try and take that piece of the pie. You know, and try and take all the weaponry and stuff for themselves. So, because he's also providing weaponry for the police to be able to combat these warring criminal gangs. So, I like that he's really taken on a sort of heroic role. Like, he's really embracing that Batman sort of quality to himself, which I enjoyed. And I also liked if you saw it, there were scenes fairly early on in the premiere where Gordon and Bruce were on the rooftop.
Yeah.
And he had the skylight, you know, turned on. I mean, it's not the bat signal yet, but it's what will become the bat signal. And Gordon's explanation of, because Bruce asks him, why do you leave it on? And Gordon says, to show people that there's still light in the darkness and give them hope. And I think that's pretty cool, because I think that's a nod to The Dark Knight. Because remember at the beginning of that film, Gordon turns on the signal and I think it was Ramirez that says, well, why do you keep it on for so long? How do you know Batman's even out there? And he's like, I can't be sure. He goes, but I like to let everybody else know that he's out there. So I thought that was a nice nod to The Dark Knight. I don't know if it was intentional, but that's how I saw it. As.
Okay.
And then when Bruce does get involved with the, like in the fights and he tries to steal the weaponry back from the criminals who have apprehended it. I like the fact that he, like Lucius Fox, has outfitted him with a night vision, like goggles kind of thing. And that was pretty cool how he sort of lurked in the shadows, used the night vision goggles, and sort of surprise attacked you know, the various criminals he was battling against. That was a very, again, a very Batman-esque maneuver. And I could see those goggles becoming, like him retrofitting those goggles into the cowl and becoming like the lenses that Batman has in the cowl. What do you think about that?
I agree with you 100%. And I also like that he didn't succeed all the way, showing that he's still just a young, not even quite there Batman. He didn't stop him from getting away because the light was turned on and affected his sight wearing the night vision goggles. So I'm sure he'll probably address that too in the cowl, like have a just-in-case scenario where if somebody turned on lights, it wouldn't blind you. Yeah. So I think like he's going to be learning from these experiences as well and helping him form his suit, like you said. I'm assuming maybe he'll get Lucius to build it for him in this version.
For sure. But yeah.
I love this, Adam. This was, like you mentioned, that scene on the rooftop with Gordon and Bruce. I love that. And like you mentioned, the way Gordon was describing the bat signal, that's the way that we all take it. It not only lets criminals know that he's still out there, but the people of Gotham as well, to know that he's protecting them. So I just love that scene, and it showed the chemistry between those two actors quite well.
Yeah, I agreed. And it's like you said, I like the fact that there was an element of failure there for Bruce. So because you can't show him as being perfect and infallible, because especially because he is so young still. So I like that there's some sort of inexperience being shown here. I also really like that we got some pretty high stakes right off the bat in terms of one of the main characters, or one of the core characters that we've gotten used to over the years, was killed. Tabitha was shot and killed when the Penguin and Barbara Keane were feuding over you know, getting away with the spoils that Bruce Wayne had flown in to try and you know, alleviate the stress on the city.
I don't think it was Barbara. I think that he was against Jim Gordon, and I think that Tabitha just went on her own vengeance.
Oh, yes, and then, yeah, that's right. And then
Barbara came in after, pretty mad that it all happened. And I'm going to be honest with you, Adam, I was kind of wishing she was the one that was going to get killed instead of Tabitha.
You know what's funny? I used to, like, there was a point when they, when they started this transition of Barbara into this criminal mastermind, whatever you want to call her, I originally hated it, and I couldn't stand the character. But she's kind of warm. I've kind of warmed to her over the course of the season. Like I used to, there was a point where I couldn't stand her, but I'm warming to that character. I still think when they turn her into Ra's al Ghul for like 3 or 4 episodes, I thought that was stupid. But I am warming to that character. I mean, to me, the worst character on Gotham of all time was Fish Mooney.
She was pretty bad.
She was terrible. But so nobody's approached that level of horrendous since she's been on. So I am warming to her. But hey, if she would have got shot, I would have been okay with that. But yeah, it's too bad. I like Tabitha. She was a pre, even though Selina Kyle becomes Catwoman, I always looked at her as a pre-Catwoman kind of character.
Agreed. I have a question for you now. What do you think about Edward Nygma's the Riddler's whole thing here in this first episode?
Okay, that was one of my issues with the whole. Okay. That was one of my negatives because, I love the way they do the Riddler in this show. And I think Corey Michael Smith has given us a definitive version of the Riddler. But the idea that he's again struggling with his memory and like losing time, we've done this storyline already in Gotham. And it seems like to me that they're retreading on that ground again.
I agree with you, and it sounds like they've been hanging out with the Arrow writers from season 5 and 6, where they did the exact same storyline about breaking up a team for 2 seasons in a row. I hate that. It's like they think the audience forgets. No, we're fans of the show. We know what happened in previous seasons. Can you please not do something like that? Just let him be full-blown Riddler.
Yeah, please. I mean, we've only got 12 episodes this season. Like, let's get to it.
I enjoyed some of it, but still, it's not, because I just want to know what he's planning.
Well, like I said, there's nothing wrong with his performance.
No.
His performance is great. It's just the fact that, again, we've been there, done that. Let's move the story along now. So that was my issue with it. That was my biggest problem. The only other negative I have, really, is that I wanted to see more of the Scarecrow, because the little bits of him we got on screen were great. I think, like I said, and again, some people are going to call me sacrilegious for saying this, but I don't care. I like going against the grain. I think that Gotham's version of the Scarecrow throughout the course of the seasons has been the best iteration we've gotten.
I don't think that's that much of an outrageous statement at all. I think that what we were given, the depth we were given, and now what he's like as full-blown Scarecrow, I'm completely okay with that. I kind of would like a little bit more menacing voice, just a little bit, but I still enjoy the character. He's probably the highlight of the episode for me. One thing I have a complaint about, I know they couldn't do this for story-wise, but are you telling me nobody got a pair of cuffs to put on the Penguin at the end there? You just let him go?
Yeah.
There was only one guy with him. He drops his gun, and Penguin just walks out of there. I'm sorry, Barbara, you let him walk? That was the complaint I had. Penguin should have probably been locked up with the way that played out. But just letting him walk away like that, I didn't like. But I can see they're molding him to walk like the Penguin now. And
yeah, because he got shot in the leg again, so he's got the limp back again, which I like.
Yeah, it seemed like it was in his knee more than his actual leg, which probably might mess up his walk even more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I understand why they let him go, but I'm just saying they maybe have a few more of Penguin's guys come in and get him out of there, rather than just him and one guy. That's just a nitpick, I know, but it's just something that bothered me. I'm just like, okay, you all complain about how, and Harvey's going to complain at the end of the episode about you not killing Penguin. You were there too, Harvey. Everyone was there. You could have shot him yourself.
Yeah.
Why does Jim have to be the guy?
Jim is the only cop that knows how to do anything in this.
He's the only one allowed to kill.
Yeah, I guess so. but like I said, to me, I think that for the most part, this was a great start to the final season. I mean, think about how crazy the episode was. And we haven't even seen Jeremiah yet.
And we haven't seen half the other territories.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to see. I can't wait. Like, the only other thing I would have loved is if they would have, like, took little moments to set up. Like, if we saw a little bit more of Scarecrow, if we saw any of Mr. Freeze at all, you know, that would have been cool. But I guess over the course of the next few episodes, we'll see more of those factions. But also, you know what I'm hoping that they do? I'm really hoping that with each episode, Bruce and Lucius add to the bat costume, like the bat tech, right?
So you could be really right on the money there, Adam, to be honest with you, because if we get him using another thing next episode, like he did with the night vision goggles in this episode, I'm 100% going to believe that they're going to, like, that's going to be the core of the bat suit that they're going to figure out in these probably first 8 episodes or so. I assume we'll get, I don't think we'll just get one scene of Batman, because the way that the Joker is born, Batman's actually Batman when that happens. So maybe that'll be in the final episode or two. But I really like, that's a great observation there, that they're probably going to build parts of the Batsuit with stuff that they're going to do, like weapons and stuff that are flying out this season. That's fantastic.
And also, let's just say that, you know, I let's just talk a little bit about the trailer at the end of the episode, because it was not necessarily just a teaser for episode 2. But
no, it was more a season type thing, yeah.
Exactly. And what we saw was, we saw the beginnings of the moment at Ace Chemicals, with the Vada chemicals underneath them. So we saw that. And then right at the tail end, there was this image of Batman, first of all, like sort of leaping down, like, you know, in classic Batman mode. And then we saw him, or we saw his silhouette, but it, like, sort of in, I don't know how to describe it. We saw Batman without actually full-fledged seeing Batman, you know what I mean? And that moment, those quick-cut scenes were very reminiscent of Batman 89.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Almost to the point where I'm like, did they just take footage from Batman 89 and quickly rejig it and insert it into this trailer? Like, I could so see, because I was getting, I'm like, oh my God, it looks like Batman 89. I was in love with that 10 second, or not even 10 second, 2.5 seconds, but whatever it was. I'm like, oh my God, it reminds me of Batman 89. I'm 6 again, which is great, which would be great actually. But yeah, I it was great, and I'm like, oh my God, look, here's what I gotta say. I made a controversial statement on Twitter last week, I think it was, and I'll elaborate it as we go along throughout the season of Gotham, but I'll make the claim early on, and then, once we hit the series finale, I'll expand on why. But in my opinion, I think, as a prequel origin show, I think Gotham is a better show than Smallville. And I'll explain why for the series during our review of the series finale. But the other thing I want to say before we give our rating and put a pin in this episode is that I don't understand, Travis, all the hate that Gotham gets online and from people. Because, look, here's the best way I take shows like this and like Smallville. They're Elseworld stories. And I got to give, you know, Gotham credit, because the fact that it's a comic book show and things can get sometimes outlandish and crazy, guess what? Gotham embraces that. And I love the fact that Gotham embraces the craziness and outlandishness. I've always said this, and tell me if you agree. But to me, Gotham is a melding of Tim Burton's Batman with Christopher Nolan's Batman, with a sprinkle of Batman 66 in there with some of the villains. Would you agree with that?
I kind of like that statement, to be honest with you. I don't understand the hate, but that happens for so many shows and so much content. I just don't know. If you don't like something, just stop it. Stop watching it. Put it out, like, get, like, you don't have to put it down for somebody else. Just, if I don't like something, I'm not going to go out and completely blast it every day. Like, yeah. What a waste of time. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why you can't enjoy it. And if they stick the landing at him in this final season, and depending on how they handle Batman in the suit, and how, I don't think it got to be really hard to outshine what Welling gave us with Superman's suit.
Christ almighty.
But if it sticks the landing really well and gives us what we all want, I think that statement could completely hold up.
Yeah, and look, I'm going to say it right now. Look, that 2 seconds of Batman that we saw in that trailer, It's about the equivalent of what we saw of Tom wanting a Superman.
100% agree. I still disagree. He could do a lot of fans, a lot of payback for showing up in next year's Crisis on Infinite Earths in the Superman costume for more than a freaking second.
But he won't. You know that. You know. And I look. I can see everybody else coming back. Like I could see John Glover as Lionel Luthor. I can see Michael Rosenbaum as Lex. But they're gonna have to if they did that and wanted to say that there was a Superman on the smaller Earth, it would have to be Brandon Routh playing his version of Superman.
Because really?
I don't think Welling is gonna come back. I think Welling is an egotistical individual, and I don't think he wants anything to, like he said, yeah, I'll do an animated, but that's because he can do it in his pajamas. And he doesn't have to show up and you know, all he has to do is voice the thing, which is fine if they did that. But like, he's never, here's the thing. Throughout the 10 years, he's never wanted to play Superman, and I don't think that's changed.
I think that it might have changed a bit in the last couple of years, because I think Mr. Welling thought, I'm a superstar. I'm going to be an A-list actor. I'm going to get all the movie parts. Yeah. And I think that life came at him pretty hard after Smallville. We didn't see him much at all. He had a messy divorce. I think that in the last year and a half, he might, like, I could be wrong, now that we might get, if we get past Christ on Infinite Earth and he doesn't appear, then I'm wrong about this. But it has seemed like in the last year plus, he's embraced it a little bit more, showed up the Comic-Cons and stuff like that that he never did before. Now, I don't know how much he gets paid for each appearance, how much he charges for autographs.
Apparently he charges, it's a nice chunk of change.
But maybe that could be his sole reasoning behind it, but money talks, Adam, so it all depends on how much they're willing to give Mr. Welling for a 4 or 5 days worth of work reprising that role. So
look, I'll say this. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in Crisis.
Yeah, this is the only chance. And he could play a bit older Superman with a bit of gray in. We know a few storylines that has happened in.
Yeah, older Superman. Kingdom Come, which should be the next animated movie that Mary Ellen covers, I hope.
Oh, you're hoping for that for sure. But that he could be that kind of Superman, right? And then we could, because I think seeing Rosenbaum's, I don't think we see Rosenbaum's Lex without Welling Superman, because that would just be weird, unless you tell us that his version of Lex has killed Welling's version of Superman.
But, I'd be down with that.
Oh yeah, well, we're never gonna. I know there's people that would be, like, get their pitchforks ready to flip out, but we're never going to see this Smallville again on the big screen, like on TV. So I don't know why people would care, even if we just got Lex. But I would love to see both of them, and I think there is a way that they can make that happen. But like you said, Welling has got to check that former, I don't know if he still has it, but that old ego got to be checked at the door if he's going to come back.
And that's why, you know, I appreciate David Mazouz so much, because he's actually looking for, like, he's wanted to play Batman since, you know, he first got the role. Like, he was hoping that the show would go 10 or so years there so he could play, you know, full-fledged Batman. So he's wanted to be Batman from the outset, whereas Welling was the complete opposite, where he's like, no, I don't want to play Superman.
No, no tights, no flight.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I appreciate David Mazouz a lot more than Welling. But let's give our final thoughts. Again, I'll reiterate. I thought this was a very, very strong start to the season overall. And I think the benefit of having 12 seasons is I don't think they're going to waste any time. I think they're just going to get right to it and keep hitting us with all the craziness coming at us fast and fast, hard and furiously. So I can't wait. And it's one of those shows now where each week I'm looking forward to sitting down and seeing what happens next. What about you?
I mean, we're in total agreement here, and I think we're going to enjoy reviewing this season of Gotham. I can't wait for the next episode. It makes me want to rewatch old episodes as well. So
Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe that's what we'll do. After it's done, we'll do a retrospective.
That sounds like fun. But I'm in total agreement. I thought this was a really strong start to the season. I have a couple nitpicks, but I'd give it a 4, easily 4 out of 5.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go a little higher, and I'll go out of a 10 score, or whatever, and give it a same deal, yeah. 8 out of 10, you know, 4 out of 5, however you want to.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a great start.
It lost a half point for me for nobody handcuffing Penguin.
Yeah, for me, where I took off points was the stuff with the Riddler, because it felt like a retread.
Yeah.
And the lack of showing the likes of Mr. Freeze and Zazz and Firefly and all that. So I think they could have done a slightly better job of showing us little glimpses of each of the factions at play.
Agreed.
Not just focusing on the Penguin and Barbara. But that was it. Other than that, it was great. And bring on next week. Speaking of next week, we are going to cover another episode of Gotham, as well as the first 3 episodes of Young Justice, which have aired. And so we will talk about both of those things next week. But before we get out of here, Travis, let's do some social media plugging. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Travis_156. You can drop me a line and we can chat DC anytime. I also have a little side, small, quick thought podcast from Anchor called Superhero Discussions. I just posted 2 episodes in the last couple of days, one on Captain Marvel trailer and another on just first initial quick thoughts of Young Justice Season 3.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi. And you can also find me over at Revenge of the Fans. Through my articles, my weekly column, Tales from the DC Multiverse, with spelled incorrectly to emphasize the TV aspect of it all. So check those out. Interact with me through comments on my articles if you want. And it's also worth noting that in addition to being part of Revenge of the Fans, we are also part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. So we thank both of those venues for hosting us. And we hope that you enjoyed the episode. And we hope that you have a wonderful week and a wonderful weekend. Until next time, so long, everybody.
See you guys.